heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked on Cavaliers. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today we have a bunch of different things kind of going on. We're not going to go too much into that game. Just didn't really think there's a lot to pull from. I'm going to hit on the two things that I think do matter, and then you're going to hear from David Ramil, the host of Locked on Heat, the co-host of Locked on Heat, about Derek Williams, recorded a segment with him just about Derek Williams, and then you're going to hear a longer conversation between myself and Adam Mares, the host of Locked on Nuggets, the editor over at Denver Stiffs, SB Nation's Nuggets blog, and the writer of Vice Sports' NBA wraparound. So we got a bunch of stuff kind of going on, three different segments. And I thought the stuff we're going to cover with Derek Williams and David and with LeBron and all kinds of different Nikola Jokic things with Adam Mares for Saturday's game, thought were just a bit more interesting than this Cavs game, especially because I didn't think the big three were going to play, and they play last minute. And yet there's two things I just think are worth kind of pulling from this game. One, LeBron James playing 41 minutes is kind of bonkers. We've talked about this a lot on this show. Him playing 41 minutes in the second half of a back-to-back, with the Cavs losing, with this game being a scheduled loss in so many ways, just feels weird. I'm not a big fan of him playing in this game, personally. I didn't think it made sense. I thought if you want to play LeBron, Kyrie, and Love, do it. But give LeBron the night off. 41 minutes for him is just a bit too many. I know you're sort of struggling right now to fill minutes at that spot because Amon Shumpert is out, J.R. Smith is out, all these different things. But you could do better than to play LeBron 41 minutes. And I know you don't want to just lose games, but look, like, it's also time to give LeBron some nights where he doesn't have to play that many games, especially in the second half of back-to-back. But start thinking about the long game. You've got 30 games left, until the regular season wraps up. And by then, you want LeBron optimized for the playoffs. Him playing 41 minutes on the second half of a back-to-back in a game that really, in the big scheme of things, is going to mean nothing. You're not going to be thinking about this game and what it means 6 months from now. You're just not going to remember this game as a 2016-17 memorable game. You're just frankly not. And if you do, I guess, you know, props to you, but not going to happen. This game, LeBron doesn't need to play 42 minutes. Play Richard Jefferson more than five. Play James Jones. Just do things to give LeBron a rest. Give him the night off. I hope between now and the All-Star break, just for the Cavs' sake, I do hope that we get LeBron getting a night off. I think if you want to get the best LeBron for the playoffs, I think he needs a night off now. Is that going to be... There's three games left before the All-Star break. Nuggets at home on Saturday. At the Timberwolves on Tuesday in Minnesota. And then Wednesday at home against the Indiana Pacers. The Cleveland Cavaliers probably don't even need to worry about these games. If I was the Cavs, I might rest LeBron for all three. I expect to see him Saturday. I kind of hope he doesn't play in at least one of those games next week. But 41 minutes, again, too much for LeBron James. The other thing is Derek Williams was actually kind of decent in this game. I'm not totally big on him, and David's going to kind of informs a lot of how I think about him. And I think, you know, he does kind of play four, and, you know, he is filling spots where you want to rest LeBron, but I did think he was fine. 12 points, didn't rebound, which is just kind of weird, but 22 minutes, 3-3 from the field, went to the line eight times. I sort of like the energy he played with. The Cavs did throw him into the fire when they didn't play him in that weird big lineup. I was fine with how he looked. I hope they utilize him like this for the length of this 10-day contract. I don't know if he'll be around beyond that, but for what he was tonight, I think it's fine, and I'd expect to keep seeing him in those type of roles moving forward. We'll see exactly how many minutes he plays Saturday, but that's sort of it from this game. Again, I don't think it matters in the big scheme of things. I think there are just some more important things to talk about stemming from Thursday, talking about Derek Williams and what he could be over the course of this deal for the Cavs, with David Ramil, the co-host of Locked On Heat. And again, the Heat were Derek Williams' last team until he was recently cut. And then Adam Mares from Denver Stiff's Locked On Nuggets and Vice Sports, talking about Cavs Nuggets, potential trades between the two teams. One I think you'll find kind of particularly interesting about Yusuf Nurkic. And talking just a lot about Kyrie and a bunch of other things. I hope you guys enjoy the show. We're going to take the weekend off. We'll be back on Monday, do a little Nuggets weekend recap on Monday morning. And then we'll do that mailbag. So again, get those mailbag questions in to LockedOnCavs on Twitter, to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. And hope you guys enjoy the segments. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Enjoy Cavs Nuggets. If you're at the game, you get to see Jokic. That's what I'm looking forward to seeing when I cover that game. And we'll talk to you guys again on Monday.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, so David, was Derek Williams actually good in Miami?
Was he actually good? No, he was not. There was a lot of issues there. I think a lot of Heat fans and people covering the team expected him to be the starter at the beginning of the season at power forward. You know, because of his length and versatility, unfortunately, he did not get that opportunity. And then it just seemed to get increasingly complicated as the season went on. He just didn't play for a number of games. There were reports that he wasn't necessarily engaged offensively, not defensively, which was what a lot of people assumed would be a struggle for him to pick up, especially in Miami system. And then he would just play, you know, very sparingly. He would come in for a few minutes at a time. Then when injuries started decimating the roster, he would get a couple starts and struggle with those. The power forward position has been one of weakness for Miami all season. So to answer the question bluntly, no, he was not particularly good.
How much of that do you blame on the structure of what's going on in Miami right now?
I'd say that's a pretty considerable amount. I think just because it's in addition to everything else that he's faced throughout his career, I mean, you consider the fact that he was so young when he got drafted, and he was in really bad situations with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and then later on with the Sacramento Kings, and then the New York Knicks. So all these teams were, you know, units in various states of dysfunction. And he went through a number of coaches there, couldn't really get any kind of consistency. And when I talked to him at the start of the season, he acknowledged that that had played a big part in getting him to where he is right now. But he also acknowledged that there was a problem within himself, that he wasn't making the most of those opportunities. He never really had a concrete answer as to why he had been inconsistent throughout his playing career. And then as far as Miami is concerned, I think it does add, on top of everything else that he's gone through, you know, maybe if he had had a starting position from day one, he would have been able to hold on to it, maybe grow into the role as the season progressed. But because it was so inconsistent, you never really knew from a game-to-game basis what was going to happen, whether he was going to play, start, get a few minutes here and there. So that just adds to the increasing instability that he's dealt with throughout his whole career.
Yeah, that sounds kind of about right with everything there. So why exactly was he let go?
Well, I think because, you know, he'd had some kind of an arrangement with a team. He spoke with Pat Riley and said, look, I just can't seem to find any kind of playing time. And Riley, to his credit, said, if we can't find any playing time for you, then we'll try to do something and move on and help you get another opportunity elsewhere. And then when Miami picked up O'Kara White out of their D-League team over in Sioux Falls, he was getting the kind of playing time that Derek Williams should have been getting. And he was getting the kind of faith put in him by Eric Spoelstra that Williams would have hoped for. You know, he was playing clutch minutes. He was playing some consistent defense, knocking down the occasional long-range shot, doing the little things that have been a real, you know, improvement for Miami, especially during this recent 12-game winning streak. And Derek Williams hardly ever played during that stretch at all. And so with O'Kara White getting these consistent minutes, he was signed to a 10-day contract. Then, you know, by league rule, he could be signed to an additional 10-day contract. But once those expired, Miami was forced to make a decision either to try and retain White for the rest of the season and beyond, which is what they eventually did, or to release a player on their team. And so they chose to release Williams. And you know, Williams made a tweet or sent out a tweet shortly after the waiving became, you know, public. And he, you know, gave credit to Pat Riley for being a quote-unquote man of his word. And so I think he appreciates what happened in South Florida, but he recognized that his time here, as brief as it was, wasn't going to be necessarily a productive step for him at this point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds about right as well. And it's funny that where he is now, considering there are people back in 2011 that argued that he was the pick and not Kyrie, which if that would have happened, just utter chaos. And just imagine drafting how the Cavs drafted, and you put him instead of Kyrie, and you know probably don't get Tristan. It's just an utter mess to think about. All right, so how, and this is a 10-day thing, you know, could be two more, could be the rest of the season deal here, depending on how he plays, I guess, but how do you think he fits in Cleveland, and how would you utilize him on a 10-day deal?
Well, I think, you know, he's not going to get much playing time, obviously, because the team does, you know, have a pretty, you know, not necessarily great depth, but there is enough depth to, I think, keep him buried in there. I think, you know, he can play either the three or four. Ideally, I think he'd play at the four. Somebody who could play alongside a guy like LeBron, who can catch those passes. He's athletic enough, I think, to keep pace with a guy like LeBron or even Kyrie. As long as you feed him the ball in right spots, I think he can maximize his athletic ability. And he is not necessarily the playmaker that Cleveland was looking for, but he can create some offense for others. He's a fair, you know, to average rebounder. He is very, very athletic. He does have that speed and the size that where he can play both forward positions, I think. So he does have potential to be a nice addition. And from my perspective, I think Cleveland, considering how they are currently, you know, set up, I think with the expectations for this team to compete for a title, I think that kind of structure, you know, much like children, they need kind of a structured organizational, you know, something in place there to keep them in line. I think for a guy like Williams, I think this is going to work really well. So I think as long as he has a clearly defined role and with personalities like LeBron and Kyrie and others, I think they'll help keep him in line. I think it could be a good fit, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I kind of like the potential upside of it. I think in certain situations, I think he can definitely play. I think it allows you to give RJ and LeBron some more rest, because I think, I mean, just to wrap this up here, he is a 3-4, mostly a 4 at this point, correct?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, he can play some 3, but yeah, I think he's got the size and speed where he can provide a mismatch at power forward.
Would he be able to play 5? Is that something you could do just in garbage minutes, or would that be something you think would be passable?
I don't see it. He didn't have much opportunity here in Miami, but it wasn't something that they did. You know, strangely enough, a guy who he competed for at power forward, you know, James Johnson, has played some at the center position here in Miami. I think that's particularly because of his ball handling, and he creates some mismatches there. I think he's just a little bit more anchored in a defensive identity than Williams is. If maybe Williams was more of an earnest defender, you could hide some of those things, and maybe he'd be willing to go up against larger players and still create that mismatch for Cleveland, but I just don't see it happening.
Last thing, compared to the other options that the Cavs were linked to, I mean, a ton of them, Lance, Farmar, all those guys, how do you think Williams stacks up in a vacuum against them?
That's particularly tough to answer, because, I mean, I don't know exactly what Cleveland's biggest needs are, but
I don't think they know what their biggest needs are sometimes, to be honest.
That's a good point. As far as Williams is concerned, I mean, look, one of your or my favorite players, Dion Waiters, I think, you know, he's finally coming around this season. I think sometimes it's so crucial to look at how a player is able to fit into a system and whether or not they're all, you know, they'll be able to maximize what talents they do have. And I think Williams is still young enough. He's been in the league for so long, and people tend to forget, you know, he's still only 25. And again, with that inconsistency throughout his career, there's still an opportunity for him to use all of his great athletic ability. You know, I think that's the reason, first and foremost, why he was drafted, because he had so much potential and upside. He just hasn't been able to tap into it and fully realize it. So I think he can still be a very good player. And again, I think the system, the structure that's currently in place in Cleveland will benefit him.
Yeah, that sounds about right. David, man, thank you for coming on and helping us kind of break this down. And we're both on Waiters Peninsula Island or whatever it is, but it's good to have another Waiters truther on the pod.
You got it, Chris.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers.
And I'm Adam Mattis from Locked On Nuggets.
So this is not only a Locked On crossover, but this is also a SB Nation blog fam crossover because it's Fear the Sword and Denver Stiffs. Adam, Cavs and Nuggets for the first time this season on Saturday. You got two teams in different places going through different things, but just for hipstery reasons and for reasons I know that you are very excited, I'm pretty excited to talk about the Nuggets, actually. There's just sort of these weird overlaps with these teams and weird things we can sort of get into that I'm actually pretty excited to. It's a lot better than talking about the Raptors or the Celtics for, like, the bajillionth time, at least for me.
It was funny because Zach Lowe did his league pass rankings at the start of the year, and the Nuggets came in 29th. And that was, like, so offensive to me because I think Jokic himself is a top 10 most, like, exciting player game in and game out to watch. And for the first 6 weeks of the season, Jokic was barely playing. And when he did, he was playing poorly. He's coming off the bench. He was playing power forward. And so I was kind of like, gosh, I got all up in arms about it, and then they were terrible. But over the last 2 months, really a majority of the season at this point, I think they are a top 5 most entertaining team to watch, just from a pure basketball standpoint, not from a star power standpoint, because obviously they lack star power, but just this team, I mean, number one offense over the last 2 months, better than the Cavaliers, better than the Warriors, and they're doing that with players like Gary Harris and Emmanuel Mudiay on the floor, not exactly offensive juggernauts. So yeah, they're fun. They're fun, and you should be excited. I think you're going to have a good time watching them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Jokic on his own for me is just enough because he's so unique. The passing for him as a big, I mean, you know this, like, I don't need to tell you this, and I hope a lot of my listeners, there's listeners know this as well, but his passing for a big is just absurd. Like, I watched when they played the Wolves a couple weeks ago, and I was just, like, he was just doing stuff, just flinging the ball around, just the angles he's taking, it's amazing, and it's one of the things where seeing basketball players live is its own experience versus watching them on TV, and he's sneakily on my list of guys that I feel like I had to see this year.
I mean, I think that's absolutely accurate, and not just for being a homer, but I mean, watching Embiid this year has been a blast. Like, every second he's on the floor is must-see TV. But Jokic is the same. I think Jokic's end-of-season highlight mix is going to be as good. It's going to be right up there with anybody else's in the league because he probably has a dozen passes on his highlight mix of the year that will be in, like, the top 30 passes of the season. And that's not hyperbole. I mean, there's guys that are better passers all around, but I think he makes these, like, crazy showboat, no-look, one-handed passes pretty routinely that are just so much fun, and you never know when it's going to happen.
Yeah. So let's talk about that passing a bit for a second here. I think it's one of the things the Cavs obviously have to think about the most when they're looking at playing Denver. It's not something they're going to see a lot from other teams. It's not something many of their bigs can really replicate. How do teams typically react and defend Jokic's passing out of the post and wherever else he has the ball?
Well, it's funny because I would say Jokic, to know Jokic, there's two things that work together. And one of it is his passing, and the other is his shooting and his soft touch. I mean, he's an elite. I think a while back, he was like the fourth highest field goal percentage or true shooting percentage in the NBA. And he has like 20 dunks on the year total. So it's not like DeAndre Jordan, who's just dunking the ball, and that's how he shoots such a high percentage. He shoots threes. He shoots jumpers. He shoots floaters. He shoots jump hooks. He shoots all these crazy things. So when guys, I think early on it was like, yeah, he's a passer. So we're going to, as soon as he started throwing 8 assists a game, guys started playing the passing lanes and sagging off him a bit. And then he turned into the scoring juggernaut who's now leading the Nuggets in scoring. He puts up 20 points pretty routinely on really efficient scoring. And so now I think teams are constantly kind of caught in that give and take of, do you try to crowd his space and then risk him throwing passes around you or even dribbling around you? Or do you sag off and play the passing lanes and risk him shooting? And the nice thing about Jokic, I've always loved his passing. From 2 years ago at Summer League, I wrote an article after watching him two Summer League games saying this dude is a legit serious passer at the center position, but I didn't think he was a scorer. And now for 2 months straight, he's putting up big scoring numbers. So I think his combination of soft touch on the shot and then incredible vision and passing to cutters makes him pretty tough to guard.
Yeah, I think that's like as good a breakdown as you get about that. And I think it's interesting for me because the Cavs' defense isn't exactly – it's not great by any standards, especially in the regular season. Like, this is a team that doesn't really look to lock a lot of people down. No, it's just not what they're really interested in doing. But a lot of their struggles tend to come in fast break transition situations. When they are put on their heels, when Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love and other guys have to stop the ball, it is when they really get in trouble. If you look at the Pacers game from earlier this week, the Cavs got picked apart in the first quarter because Jeff Teague and Paul George and pretty much every Pacer that played in that first quarter did a really good job of getting in the paint and creating chaos for the Cavs to deal with. Jokic doesn't exactly do that, but I think he can with his passing and with off-ball cutting, and if the Cavs are not attentive, Jokic could theoretically really pick him apart with whatever he's doing.
I think, because I'm a big LeBron fan, so I watch the Cavs a lot just because, I mean, he's been my favorite player in the NBA since he came into the league. So, I mean, they're probably, I've been rooting for them for a decade now, at least when LeBron was there. So I say the one thing that I think is kind of the consistent of LeBron teams, and especially this Cavs team, is just kind of a poor focus on the defensive end for like more than 5 or 10 seconds. And that's kind of the type of team that I think Denver really thrives against, because when they're at their best, they run this dribble handoff game with Jokic, like left to right. He'll do one dribble handoff. If it doesn't work, he gets it back, does another one. And I think the Cavs are the type of team that after like two of those, they get a little bit bored. And then that's when you get backdoor cut for a shot at the rim. And the Nuggets are one of the top teams in the NBA at points in the paint. And it's not like they have a bunch of like dunkers or really athletic guys. Kenneth Fareed's really the only one. But it's just because they're so good at that sort of backdoor or curl off of the dribble pitch that they get a lot. So, but the other part of this is the Nuggets have put up points on every team. It doesn't matter. They put up 104 on the Spurs, 103 on the Jazz. I mean, all these defensive juggernauts that you think they basically play at the Nuggets' level, because the thing is the Nuggets are the number one offense. They're the number 30 defense over the last 2 months. So it's not that they can't score. Even on the best defenses, they score. The problem is they just can't stop anybody. I mean, they, as good as their offense is, their defense is probably the worst defense I've ever seen in my life.
It's interesting. I mean, like, the thing with the Cavs is I do think you're right. Like, I think it is a lot of focus. And I think let's look at Kyrie, because I think he's the guy that is scapegoated most for the defense. And I think sometimes that's fair. Sometimes it's not. I think when Kyrie Irving wants to be, and when the Cavs really need him to be, I think he's a passable defender. I think when you see him chasing guys off the ball and he's putting in work, he gets around screens and you see him actually make differences. You can see him getting in situations where he is poking the ball and he can create some steals.
Right.
He's not going to ever be a lockdown defender in the way you'd maybe want him to be in a perfect world if he was to reach his potential. But I don't think I think like Curry is a better defender than him right now, but I don't think Kyrie getting to the point where he could be like Curry and defend most guys and just sort of be passable, I really don't think that's out of the question. But I think like right now in the regular season, when you're seeing him just get like wrecked off the dribble and dying on screens, you see that still too much. And I think that's kind of a big reason why the Cavs' defense is bad. Plus, is Timofey Mozgov good anymore? Like everything says no. But I think like losing a body like that out of your rotation and losing what he was that first half of a year when the Cavs got him coincidentally from the Nuggets, that changed the Cavs defense. Because I love Tristan Thompson. I think he's a great player. I think the talk everyone arguing now that are saying that he's overpaid and all this stuff, it's bonkers. But he's not a traditional great rim protector. He does a lot of things well. He rates out pretty well, but he's not going to protect the rim in a verticality sense. He's great on the move. He's not great at just botting up the rim and keeping guys from getting clean runs.
No, I think you're right about that. And I'll say this about Mozgov, because you're right. He's not a good player, like in a vacuum. He doesn't have a lot of skills, but he does have two skills that I think fit the Cavs so well. One is, and this is a George Karl thing, he knows how to stay out of the paint, which is a surprising that's like an important skill that's really not talked about very much with big guys, is guys that just know not to be in the way, especially when you have a LeBron James and Kyrie Irving on your team that are so good at getting to the rim and collapsing the defense that you need a big that can finish from the short corner but doesn't like take up space in the rim and bring his defender in there to help. So he was good at that, and I think it worked. And then obviously on the defensive end, he is a big body, and while he's not like thought of as this elite rim protector, he is just like a physical, you know, he has this physical presence in there that a team needs, even if it's only at 10 minutes a game. That 10-minute stretch can kind of be the difference between winning and losing a lot of times. So I do think that was actually a big loss. And yeah, that's something obviously that the Cavs are severely lacking and might even come in to bite him in the butt in a playoff series, although I don't know that it's going to be necessarily a big issue for them against the Warriors, but it might be a bigger issue against teams like the Celtics and Raptors.
Yeah, I think then the question is, is the gap too big for that to actually change the series' outcome? Because I don't really necessarily – it's not, but it's like, is it going to make it uncomfortably close if like they're playing the Wizards and John Wall
blitzes
them inside? Like, yeah, that's going to come up. I know you talk like how much I see most of your Jokic stuff, I think, more than I see your general Nugget stuff, I guess. But where are the Nuggets at right now? Like, because some of the things about them I love Jamal Murray. I love some of the other guys they have. But some of the other stuff I watch Moutier and I can't figure it out, like, at all.
Well, I'll help you with Moutier. He's not good. That's unfortunate. But I think. I actually really, really like where the Nuggets are at right now. They have Jokic, who I think is a potential number one on a championship contender. I mean, I really do think the sky's the limit for this kid. And people have to watch him to really appreciate him, because you look at him and you think, how's this unathletic guy? So how can you say he's a number one? Just look at him. Or he can't guard anyone, which I don't think is true. I actually think he's a good defensive player. I don't think he's the reason the Nuggets are so terrible on defense, but I think he's a legit number one. And then you look at Jamal Murray, who I think is also, first of all, I love Jamal Murray, and I didn't like him actually at the draft. But getting to know him, he's a guy that's incredibly focused, incredibly driven, incredibly locked in. I love going to practice. You know how it is at practices. I don't know how it is with the Cavs, but at the Nuggets, you get in with like 10 minutes left to go in practice, and they're really just doing like individual workout stuff. It's not anything really of substance. But you get a sense of a guy's work ethic by watching him in those moments, because a lot of guys just kind of go through the motions of like shooting around the arc or something, just their shooting drills. Jamal Murray is so dialed in on the very specifics of footwork on different moves every single day. And I'm always like, man, that's the stuff that pays off. And then when you watch him, his footwork is just incredible on like pick and rolls and finishes, his touch. He's got like, he's not in Kyrie's level, of course, but he's got a little bit of that Kyrie where he finishes these crazy shots at the rim that very few players are able to do. And as a rookie, he does that. So I think going forward, that might become even more and more so. I think Gary Harris is a terrific two-way player who has incredible chemistry with Jokic. With Jokic, you've got to surround him with guys that can play defense and can cut more than anything, and Gary Harris is an elite cutter. And then they've got this guy, Juancho Hernangómez, who doesn't play a whole lot right now, 21-year-old, 6'8", kind of a slasher shooter from Spain, and also a super hustle guy, pretty athletic. I think those four guys make up a really, really nice core. And everything else around them are nice pieces for now, to kind of, you know, some vets like Gallo and Chandler and Kenneth Reed. And those guys all really help out right now. But I think the future of the Nuggets is a sleeping giant with some of the young talent. And not just the talent, but the way that the talent meshes together.
Yeah, I buy that. I buy the Jokic thing. I buy the Murray thing. I remember I read a story about Murray that he's really big into meditation.
Yep.
And I found that fascinating, because I don't think you get a lot of, like, to sort of generalize, I don't think you get a lot of guys that in the NBA that necessarily like think about their like life in that way. Like, at least they're not open enough to like talk about that. With Murray, it was one of the first things I ever read about him when I was doing some digging into draft prospects, like getting my last minute binge in, that I found that he was really big into meditation. I think that's fascinating, and I think it's like a very sort of, like you said, like it's a very focused, disciplined sort of thing to take on and make it a part of your life. Like,
it seems like it's meditation within a basketball context too, because the guy is a gym rat, right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of these guys that have, they like basketball, but they really like all this other stuff as well. And Jamal Murray crosses me as a guy that just wants to play basketball and doesn't really care about anything else. And the whole meditation thing really does, he crosses me as this guy, and I'm projecting a lot here because I don't know this for a fact, even though I've talked to him about it a little bit. He seems like a guy that like works out for 4 hours, goes home and meditates about his workout, and then like goes back to the gym to work out some more. It's not just the meditation. I think it's like he's such a focused and mentally aware person, and really uses that as part of his training regimen.
Yeah, I think that's really neat. Like, I think that's like when the if a mega Jamal Murray profile ever comes, I'm gonna want like 3 pages worth of just like the meditation deep dive, because I just find that like mindfulness like very fascinating.
Yeah,
the Nuggets, I think you're right. Like, I think the Moutier thing's kind of a bummer, because he like the physical profile of Moutier is just fantastic. Like, he's got the size, he's got a lot of things you want. I thought early in his rookie year, I really, really liked what I saw. Like, I was a big fan of what I saw, and then it just sort of hasn't happened. But it's also like the thing I think about the Nuggets, and tell me if this is, you know, off the wall at all, I don't really love the idea of teams that are young pushing to just win and to make the playoffs right away. Like, I know you like the idea of getting playoff experience, but if you look at Jokic's age, you look at Murray's age, you look at Harris's age, the Nuggets aren't shouldn't be in a rush to win right now.
Right.
And like, I think like it's the same thing with the Wolves to an extent. Like, is being an 8 seed going to be a good experience for your guys to plan the playoffs and do all that stuff and see what it takes to get at least to that level for sure. But you're going to get slaughtered by Golden State anyway. You know, like, I just don't know how much value that actually has. I just, like, the process of what they're doing now to me, I think, is just sort of interesting. And I think just, like, with the flexibility and with some of the guys I actually have, I kind of agree with you. I do think there is, as an outsider, like, I'm very fascinated to see where they go, because I compared to something like Orlando or Phoenix or, like, the Wolves are, like, the only team because they have Towns and because they have, like, other guys, and I think, like, I'm higher on Wiggins than I think a lot of people are. I sort of like that, but like, those are two really good situations. And it's like, if you're that good and you have that guy, I think that's like enough. Like, people get very stressed out. Like, I did this with the Cavs. You get very stressed out about where you could go. Just enjoy it. And I'm kind of enjoying the Nuggets because of that.
Then that's I'm with you in part, but I'm going to sort of play devil's advocate. But on the broader point about just enjoying where you're at, I think that's the key for Nuggets fans, and I've kind of preached that over the last couple weeks of, look, they're not going to win a championship. They might not make the 8 seed, and they might finish one game outside of the 8 seed, which is the worst position in basketball. But just kind of enjoy this process of seeing Jokic come into his own. See Jamal Murray. He went 0-18 to start the year, Jamal Murray did. So it took him like 8 games before he made a shot in the NBA. And then he went on this like terror where he was making all kinds of threes and was like super exciting. So I think I'm with you about just enjoy the ride, but here's what I'll say. Jamal Murray's playing 20 minutes per game. I don't think he could handle more than that right now. The Nuggets handed the keys to Emmanuel Mudiay last year, and he was playing 32 minutes a night. He was the one that was losing games for them more often than not. There was tons of pressure on him, and I think it was a mistake. So seeing the team this year pushing for the 8 seed, they have a common goal to all kind of rally around, vets and young guys, and the young guys, I think, have enough vets in front of them to kind of be like, this is how you're supposed to play, and you know, kind of learn from these guys, that I think it's a healthy balance. Now, the mistake they could make is making a win-now trade and sacrificing one of their pieces or playing time or something like that for a win-now move, but I don't expect the Nuggets will do that. I think that they kind of like this. Jamal Murray's playing of 20 minutes. Jokic is playing 30. I think when Moutier comes back, my hope is actually that they reduce his minutes. He's playing 29, I think, right now. I just don't think he's good enough to play that many. So I kind of like this. I like having the goal of trying to get there and establishing this winning identity. And I don't mind them sacrificing some of the short-term minutes for these guys, because they're playing enough for it to be valuable. And I think next year, guys like Jamal Murray will start playing 25, 26 minutes per game, and that'll be when they really make a leap.
We can flip to the Cavs, I guess, after this. But do you think they're making the playoffs?
It's so tough. A lot of it'll depend on health, to be honest, because Danilo Gallinari, Wilson Chandler haven't been the healthiest guys, and they've been healthy for most of the year. So an injury to one of those guys, I think, would push them out. But I think they have the inside track. They have a winning record since December 15th when they gave the keys to Nikola Jokic and started playing through him. When they play through him and it's still a battle, guys like Jameer Nelson and Will Barton, Wilson Chandler even sometimes like to pound the air out of the ball a little bit too much. But when they play through Jokic, I just feel like they can beat just about anybody, and they get hot for streaks, win 4 or 5 in a row. I think they have an inside track, especially, look, Sacramento lost Rudy Gay. They're kind of a chaotic team anyway. Boogie's going to miss a game now with suspension. Portland hasn't seemed to figure things out all year, and they just lost Evan Turner. New Orleans obviously has had health injuries and might make a crazy trade before the deadline. And then who else is there? Minnesota lost LaVine. So it seems like all the contenders have had some worse luck than the Nuggets to date, knock on wood. And the Nuggets already having the inside track, having a better record at this point, I think I give them a slight edge.
Yeah, I think I'd be down for them making the playoffs. I just don't think that out of those teams that are gunning for the 8 seed, I don't think there's like a clear team that is actually, you know, like I'm intrigued seeing the Warriors play.
Right.
You know, like and it's just like, it's the Warriors at this point. They're just so good. It's just like, they're going to obliterate whoever they play. I think it's just like, if like Jokic or if the Wolves or the Nuggets make it, I'm in. I don't really need to see the Blazers or like DeMarcus Cousins get destroyed by the Warriors.
Or the Mavericks. Gosh, the Mavericks would be so boring because it's all a bunch of guys. I mean, outside of Dirk, I guess, it's a bunch of guys you don't care about. And all of these teams are going to get swept. But I'll tell you for Denver why it's so important.
We have the worst
fans in the NBA and the worst like attendance. I think they're actually third now in attendance, but I have a feeling a lot of that is ticket giveaways. There's just no buzz around this team. It's starting to grow with Jokic a little bit, but I always say Jokic is more popular around the NBA than he is in Denver because people here only pay attention to the Broncos. And I think making the playoffs and playing the Warriors, even if they just get blown out, it'll be much easier to sell the narrative of like, hey, this is a team of 21-year-olds that just made the playoffs, you know, as underdogs and are going to be exciting for years to come. And, oh, by the way, this guy Nikola Jokic is like one of the most exciting players in all of basketball. So I think it'll be big for them just in years going forward, actually getting people out to Pepsi Center. There's been games this year with like 2,000 people at the stadium. It's kind of embarrassing, to be honest.
No, I mean, Cleveland is not like the best basketball market, frankly.
Really?
No. Okay. So, it's gonna skew, funnily, because of LeBron. Like, you're gonna watch them on national TV, and if you go to a game, you're gonna see a lot of fans there, and it's a big deal. But when LeBron was not here for those couple of years, it was really, really hard to get a lot of fans into the arena. For games where like it wasn't like a big deal. Like, I remember like the Thunder came once that when like they had all two of the guys, I think, so it was a big deal. When LeBron was here, obviously a really, really big deal.
Yeah.
Kyrie was like would get people excited, but it wasn't enough to draw a lot of people in. Like, I remember I went to a Rockets game once, like the first year of Harden Rockets, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, and I felt like there was like nobody in this arena because it was like oh, I get to see James Harden, I want to see this, and I was home from college, so it was like I wanted to see like the Cavs, and it was not really a big deal. I went to like a Pacers game once where Kyrie was out, and I was covering it as media for like the second game I ever went to one, and it was like Dan Waiters scored 19 points in the second half, and no one saw it because nobody was there.
So, yeah, that sounds like every game in the Nuggets for the last 4 years, but right. I guess that's just how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's market size, and I do think like Denver and Cleveland. I think, tell me if I'm wrong about this. Denver, like Cleveland, is a football town more than anything.
Oh, not even close. I mean, by a mile.
Yeah, so like, I think that sort of plays into it. And I think that's unfortunate because sometimes the basketball product, even if it's like not the best basketball product, I think it's just a better product than football, and that's a sport reference for me. But like, I think they can be fun. But and so I'm curious, what you've written about the Nuggets or the Cavs, excuse me, for, you know, when you write the wraparound advice. Where do you think the Cavs are at right now?
I think they're in their typical LeBron end of winter meltdown, which is kind of, like I said, I've been following LeBron his whole career. Really, since going to the Heat, it seems like every year they have some sort of crisis in January. And it's been – I think people have been writing about that. I'm sure Cavs fans are kind of familiar with that trend. But I just think that's where they are right now. Early in the season, I thought they looked as good as they had in the last 3 years. And I think that's actually who this team is. I think that's who they will be come April, May, and June. So I'm not necessarily worried about some of these like slumps that have happened over the last couple weeks. LeBron, even here's the thing, and this is my – I could be way off on this. But the whole controversy about LeBron's calling out management or whatever, I took this – and I'm probably reading into this way too long, wrong. But I read that less as LeBron calling out management and more as him like taking a subtle jab at his players, as his teammates, and trying to like motivate them, as in we need more playmakers. And I have never heard anybody make that argument, so I'm probably way off base. But I heard it more as like a him challenging his team of like, hey, we're not good enough to beat the Warriors right now. Do we have to go out and get help? And maybe hoping maybe that his teammates would take exception to that. But I haven't heard that argument from anyone, so I'm probably reading into it too much.
So I don't necessarily think you're wrong. Like, I do think there was some at the management, because I do think I cannot wait for the day that LeBron James has a book about his career come out, because I just imagine there's going to be a bajillion amazing Dan Gilbert nuggets that come out of it. Like, yeah. I just can't imagine those two guys with Gilbert's political support being for the right, the Republicans, and specifically right. He donated money to the Trump campaign and right. hosted a fundraiser for Trump. I can't imagine LeBron and him particularly see eye to eye, and then you go back to the letter. Like, I just can't imagine they see eye to eye. And Gilbert's going to say, like, we lost – I don't know if you saw this. The Cavs apparently lost, like, $40 million last year as an organization, which is just bonkers.
Right.
I can't wrap my mind around that. Could you win a title and all this stuff? But I do think there's some of the player stuff, because I do think LeBron last year really created drama. And I think Tristan Thompson had this quote at the end of the year that was like, yeah, we thrived on drama and we needed that sort of dramatic element to our team. And I do think there's some of that. And I also maybe some of it is LeBron knowing, okay, if David Griffin has come to him and said, we're going to have a hard time getting somebody because of how we've used our assets. And like, we got Korver, and that was really our best package, was how they got Korver.
Which was an amazing move, by the way.
100% like, agree.
A++ move.
Yeah, especially because he's now saying that he wants to be back next year, and you could probably get him for cheap. Like, I'm in on that.
For sure.
If that was kind of your chip to play with where they're at, and now you're getting into this territory where, unless you're going to go for young guys, which they're not going to do, and that's a whole other thing that I need to get into at some point, but you're going to have a hard time getting guys that LeBron's going to be happy with, so he has no other choice but to challenge who's on the roster. And a lot of that probably is like, I think in a perfect world, he would be fine. I think LeBron honestly would be, if Kay Felder could prove himself, if Jordan McGregor could prove himself, LeBron might have a little bit less of trust in him than he would a veteran guy like that he knows, but I think he could live with it. I think he could deal with it.
I'll tell you what, and this is, you know, me watching the Nuggets a lot, they've got this guy, Yusef Nurkic, who has a ton of potential. He's the softest guy I've ever met that's 7 foot, 300 pounds. But he really is a good defender, and I think the Nuggets are going to part ways with him for nothing. Like, I think they're just going to give him away at the trade deadline to get him out of here. The other day at a game, he hasn't been playing very much. He's got the talent to play. He just doesn't have the attitude or the toughness. But he left the arena at halftime because he was just fed up without telling anyone. And then I mean, this is the kind of mental guy that he is, right? He's so upset with his role and stuff that he's doing stuff like this. But he's such a low-risk option for Cleveland that they could probably get him for a piece that you guys are either not playing or, you know, some kind of future second-round draft pick or something. And he's a guy that I think would have a Mozgov-like effect in the short term. I don't know what his long-term mental mind frame will be like. At some point, I'm sure he would go into another sulk mode. But for like 3 months or 4 months, I think he would be incredibly motivated. And when he's good, he's an elite rim protector, elite rebounder, elite foul drawer. Like, guys just foul him because he's so huge, and he's actually pretty mobile for I would say extremely mobile for his size. He's bigger than Timofey Mozgov, and I would say more mobile than him, just to kind of put it in reference. So he's a guy that maybe they target, not as a guy that you're going to play 25, 30 minutes a night, but a guy that might just play 5 to 12 minutes and is that guy you need, draws a couple fouls on the opposing center, grabs a couple offensive rebounds, pisses people off because that's just how he plays. He's gotten into fights with DeMarcus Cousins, Marc Gasol. I mean, he's kind of a punk on the court. And maybe you can, you know, LeBron is really good at this stuff. Maybe LeBron can kind of keep him happy and focused and motivated for 4 months, and he could be a guy to keep an eye on.
So, okay, I like this, and I think this is a good segue to kind of – the thing I hinted at the top of the show and that you and I talked about off pre-recording was that you think that there are guys on the Nuggets, whether it's free agency or trade, that could make sense for the Cavs.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ask you, I'm making sure it works as we do this. So the Cavaliers could just flatly, because of the trade exceptions they have left – fit both Jameer Nelson and Yusuf Nurkic into trade exceptions. You're obviously, I don't think the Nuggets would give up Nelson for nothing. That's kind of my understanding of it.
Correct.
And he plays a lot. I mean, you'd be giving up something, and if you're trying to make the playoffs, like trading a vet, it's probably hard to stomach. But what would it take to get those guys, let's say, in a deal?
I don't really like any of the assets that Cleveland has, to be quite honest with you.
No, if anyone likes the Cavs assets, the Cavs should just like phone that in and before the team realizes that they've made a crazy mistake, because it's not like they're the Clippers and their future picks. I think the Cavs are going to have a little bit longer of a lasting lifetime than the Clippers, assuming LeBron sticks around. And unless you love Chetty Osman, Jordan McRae is not doing anything for you. Kay Felder is not doing anything for you.
McRae plays a position that the Nuggets really don't need. I mean, and Kay Felder, as much as I could say, like, okay, there's some things there, he's a point guard. The Nuggets have Moutier, they have Jamal Murray. Taking on another rookie point guard and having three rookie point guard, well, two rookies in one second year, I mean, I think Wilson Chandler would riot. Kenneth Faried would riot. Danilo Gallinari would riot. Jameer Nelson is kind of the steadying force on this team more often than not, that, like, Moutier will have three turnovers in a row and then airball a three. And it'll be like, all right, Jameer, go take some of the pressure off before Gallo strangles him. So I don't think that they can get rid of him for another project player. So it doesn't make sense to me. I don't think you guys can get Jameer Nelson. Unless Griffin has made some moves and like shuffled the players, the pieces around to make some crazy deals. So maybe they can pull in a third team and make something work. But really, Yusuf Nurkic is the only one I could see in a one-to-one deal, meaning Cleveland and Denver being the only teams involved, because like I said, I mean, you guys could throw anybody at us and they would say yes. You could throw, I don't even know anything about Osman, throw him in and then we'll call it a deal.
Yeah, that sounds about right. For listeners out there, like, I have said this on Locked On Cavs a bunch, I don't think the Cavs are actually going to be able to make a trade. Like, unless David Griffin can do something crazy, I just can't see them actually getting somebody, because if Iman Shumpert is your realistic best guy to trade out of your core, like, what does it actually get you?
I'll tell you what, not to keep hammering this home, don't look at Nurkic's stats for the year. Go look at his stats all the way up until November 18th, I think, is when they made their first lineup change, and he was incredible. He was like a double-double guy, drawing all kinds of crazy fouls and playing really well. I think his biggest problem is all mental, but I do think if you can get past that, and a guy like LeBron, first of all, would absolutely get him in line. He's a guy that like idolizes superstar players in the NBA. It's kind of funny. And I think like LeBron yelling at him would probably make him cry. So he would like try his hardest to never upset LeBron. And he's a guy that, I mean, I'm not kidding. He's not good at a lot of things, but he's good at the stuff that Cleveland needs the most. And I just think it would work. So that would be a guy that I would keep my eye on. Guys, I always said Wilson Chandler and Danilo Gallinari would be perfect in Cleveland, but there's just no way you guys are getting them in any kind of deal.
Yeah, I mean, Wilson Chandler was the guy that I thought when the Cavs still had their full trade exception and slightly better assets, I thought he would have been the dream. But, I mean, the money he's making is way out of the Cavs' price range. It's why guys like Andrew Bogut, it's why guys like Jose Calderon, for whatever crazy reason, the Cavs are interested in him. They're out of the Cavs' price range. I think Nelson would probably, to me, out of the guys that they'd be linked to at point guard, I always thought Nelson would make a lot of sense. I thought it was him or Chalmers that made the most sense. But if, I mean, the Cavs just, I don't think you're, like you said, the Cavs don't have anything that actually should entice the Nuggets to do something. I mean, would you do, I guess, in a vacuum, like a second round pick or something for Nurkic? Was that, would that be enough, or would you need a first?
I think the Nuggets would, they're going to try to milk whatever they can up until the 23rd. But if they don't have an offer that night, I think they would take the 60th pick in the draft for him. I think they're so set on just moving on. Because look, he quit. I mean, it's kind of shameful. He just quit on this team. He's gained probably 20 pounds since the start of the season. He's leaving during halftime. I mean, he's quit. And I think they're just like, get this bad juju out of here. So, yeah, I mean, I think a second rounder would probably work. I don't think it'll work today, but the trade deadline's only, what, 2 weeks away? I think on the 23rd, if nobody's calling, they would do it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I would think about that, because I don't think you're getting rim protection anywhere else unless you want Larry Sanders, and everything we've read about that is that he's not a particularly, like, he apparently didn't impress in his workout so far. So, and you got to consider, like, if he's going to fit in. I mean, Nurkic has the fit issue too, I guess, but at least with him, you can theoretically say, like, okay, we're going to develop this guy into something, and you have him under control for this year and next year on a very, very cheap salary.
He would be perfect, honestly.
Yeah. All right, so let's wrap it up on this. What's something you're really looking forward to seeing out of this game?
Ooh, that's a good one. The Nuggets, their worst thing is containing dribble penetration and pick and roll, so I predict Kyrie will go for 70. So that's probably the thing I'd be keeping my eye on. I think there's a good chance it'll be a career high or something like that. The Nuggets, the one thing about them, one of the things that makes them so fun is their games are, even when they get blown out 130 to 115. So it's always fun, high-scoring affairs, and I think that that'll be the thing that happens. And then it's always just fun to see how Jokic performs against some of the top players. So seeing how he goes up against LeBron and Kevin Love should be pretty interesting.
Do you think, by the way, do you think Kyrie is – like, what do you think of Kyrie?
This we're like 30 minutes into this podcast and people have probably enjoyed me. Now the Cleveland fans are gonna riot. I hate him. I think he's so massively overrated. But here's the thing, I think he's perfect on this Cavs team because he gets to do the things that he is really, really good at, like driving to the rim, one-on-one offense. I know his assists are go up, but I still don't think he's much of a like second level playmaker. I think he's kind of a drive, and if there's a guy open, dish it, and that type of playmaker, as opposed to, whereas LeBron's the kind of guy that can make the play four steps in advance. I actually hate Kyrie's defense. He's a one-on-one player, so he can stick guys in one-on-one situations, but I just don't think he knows what he's doing from defensive concepts. And it's nothing personal against Kyrie. He's just not the type of player I enjoy. I think he's on this perfect team where his skill set is perfectly augmented by what LeBron does and by what everybody else on the team does. And here's the thing I think, and I wonder about sometimes. You're more plugged in. This is me being an outsider. I wonder if there's going to come a Kobe-Shaq situation with Kyrie and LeBron, in which maybe it's 2 or 3 years from now where they have to kind of decide, you know, maybe there's some kind of small rift. Guys, when they play together for 4 or 5 years, just tend to get annoyed with each other. And if the Cavs need to say, do we move on from 36-year-old LeBron because Kyrie wants us to? And I just, to maybe even sooner. And I think that'll unfold very, very interestingly.
That's interesting, because I don't think they're particularly, they're not close by any means. Like, they're not buds.
Right.
And I think a lot of that's the age difference. I do think a lot [S2] Yep. [S1] Of that is age difference. I do think Kyrie would like to prove that he's like the best player, or like he would like to go for an MVP. I don't think though the Cavs could ever, unless it was like a LeBron leaving, I have a really hard time the Cavs ever being able to justify in their heads letting go LeBron James.
I mean, it's one of those things. Like, I love LeBron. He's my favorite player. I've said this. He's – how old is he, 32?
Yeah,
he's 32. Yeah, he's 32. So at what point do you start to worry? Like, how many years does he have on his deal? Does he have one more year after this one?
Yeah, he can opt out after next summer.
So just at what point do you say, do we really want to have him on for, you know, an X amount of years contract or what have you? And especially if there's some kind of rift. Look, I mean, I'm throwing out – there's a lot of things that have to happen between now and then, but – I just could see that type of thing happening. And by the way, I think you're right about Kyrie. I think he does want to be a number one guy at some point in his career, and it hasn't come. You know, I think he's happy with winning, obviously, and where they are right now. But what happens if they lose to the Warriors in back-to-back high-profile final series and Kyrie feels it's LeBron's fault and LeBron feels it's Kyrie? I mean, these are the types of things that happen that cause these crazy divides. And my personal opinion is Kyrie is, as the number one option on a team that doesn't have players like LeBron, is not going to be a very effective player. Or I should say the team is not going to be very good at all. That's just my prediction. I know Cavs fans will hate me now for it, but I don't love his skill set as an all-around player. I like him as a gunner when there's another player that sets the table for him on almost every single possession.
Yeah, we'll wrap this up here. I think he can be a guy who could be a really, really good player in a number one team. Like, I don't think, in certain ways they're different, of course, but like, I don't think him and Lillard are like that different. Like, I really don't.
Right.
The thing that I am fascinated about Kyrie is I think he does do things in spurts that are very, very, really good. Like, I really, really do. His development to me is just a fascinating case study of I don't want to just say like his issues are all from his how he started his career and stuff, but you go from Mike Brown, you go from Byron Scott to a year of Mike Brown in these just kind of really dissolute rosters to playing with LeBron.
Yep.
That's a wacky jump, man. I just also don't think like the situations he was playing in the first couple of years were not conducive to actual growth. Like, some of that has to be on him to grow. And I think he sought that out in some senses. Like, you see him seeking out Kobe, you see him seeking out mentors that weren't him. And I think Kyrie, if you act like he's actually, and like to think about Murray again, Kyrie, I think sneakily is a very mindful guy, like a very mindful, focused guy. Like, if you hear him talk about what he reads and what he's into, he actually, I think, is like very focused in that way. He reads like old Asian philosophy. Like, it was something he talked about reading at one point. He's a guy that I think is like deep in a sense, and I think he thinks about things. The issue I think is he does want to kind of be a Kobe, and if you want to be the reincarnation of Kobe, there's a lot of things that come with that, and there's a lot of flaws that come with that.
Yeah, I could go on and on about it, man. Honestly. We'll see. I mean, I don't hate the kid. There's nothing about the guy I hate. I just don't like his style, and I think it is overinflated. The one thing I will say is the things he does is incredibly valuable in the last, like, 4 minutes of a game and really the last possession type stuff of a game, because he really is as good of a one-on-one player as anybody from the guard position.
Yeah.
And that's not super valuable for 30 or 46 minutes, but it's the most valuable thing in the last 2 minutes. So I think that's no surprise that he hit the big shot of the finals last year, because I think that's what he's designed to do. And I wouldn't be surprised if he hits the big shots all, you know, an entire playoff run. I think that's just who he is, and that's part of what makes him so valuable to this team. But for 46 minutes, he's hit or miss for me.
Yeah, I think there's some of that. And I do think if I wasn't covering him a lot and watching him a lot, I probably would have different things, because I do sometimes get frustrated with what he's doing in games, and I can't just like write off some of the stuff. Like, I can't write off him, and I know it's February, and I know it's just whatever, and with how this team approaches things, I can't write him off giving up easy penetration to Jeff Teague because he takes a bad angle. Like, I just can't do it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But he does other things that are absurd, and I think he's just, his career is just so, it's just wonky in so many ways. Like, the injury stuff, the way he started his career, it's bananas. But I mean, we could go on all day. But Adam, we made it. I mean, this whole crossover, Cavs Nuggets. I think it's a 7:30 tip on Saturday in the East. That's what, 5:30 in Denver?
It is. Yeah, it's an early one.
Yeah, I'm jealous of that, to be honest with you. I would love the West Coast time. The mountain time zone, I think, is the best. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect one. I don't know how you get – it's a drag, you guys, in Cleveland, having to watch West Coast games that get over at like 1:30 in the morning. I don't know how you guys would do that.
Yeah.
It's perfect here in the mountain time zone.
The 10:30 games on on Wednesdays on ESPN. Like when I was in college last year, I would be I could stay up till 1, you know, and be fine, and like get up for my like 10:30 class and be fine. Yeah, man, not happening now that I'm like got to be like a functional adult. Like those are rough.
Well, I'm rooting. I'm rooting for you guys for this year and the next. I would love to see you guys shut out Kevin Durant and the Warriors. To me, that would just be it would make me so overjoyed. You have no idea. And I'm probably rooting for you guys for the next 3 years, right up until the point where Nikola Jokic is ready to go on his decade-long winning streak of championships. So, good luck to you guys for the next 3 years.
Yeah, it'll be great when the 3 years from now the Nuggets will take over. It'll be them and the Wolves for league supremacy. And the banana and versus the banana boat crew, somewhere in the East.
The banana boat.
Yeah, you have like the old banana boat crew. Like Dwayne Wade will be like on his absolute last legs, and they'll be playing somewhere all together, and it'll be.
Do you think that'll really happen? Honestly, do you think there's a chance?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
Where will it be?
Clippers, because I don't think LeBron's ever gonna work with Pat Riley again.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, it has to be somewhere warm, and I don't think LeBron's going to Chicago, and I don't think, like, Chicago would really be functional to do it. I don't think it would happen. It has to happen somewhere sort of like that, where they can all sort of easily amass, and, like, the Clippers to me seem like the most likely place. I cannot see LeBron playing for Pat Riley again. I can't.
I think it would be awesome if it happened in like Milwaukee or Utah or some like really obscure, random town.
Yeah.
I think like that would be the best.
Seattle comes back and they get the banana boat. They play for a title year one of the Sonics back.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. There you go.
Let's go. Let's old LeBron. We'll make it happen. Adam, everyone out there. Go subscribe to Locked On Nuggets. Subscribe to Locked On Cavs. Give us both 5-star ratings and reviews. And I'll be back. Locked On Cavs will be back on Monday. Yeah. Cool. So for Chris Manning, for Adam Morris, we'll talk to you guys whenever we both drop our next podcasts. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.